morning. I'm Tim Morrison, the host of Right Here, Right Now, a weekly internet radio show in which we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book that they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. And my co-host for the program is Stone Payton, a vital cog at Business Radio X with his own show, High Velocity Radio, as well as serving as co-host with other broadcasts on BRX Radio. Good morning, Stone.
Good morning, sir. How are you? I hadn't seen you in a little while.
Well, it's been 7 days. I mean, that's what it's supposed to be. That's true. I didn't go running away again. So you have a good weekend?
I did have a good weekend. I had a really busy Friday. Our buddy Vanessa Lowry and I were co-hosting at the Entrepreneur Advisors Symposium out at Cobb Energy Center. We must have done like 25 interviews in the space of 2.5-3 hours. We talked to a lot of very interesting people, but man, I think that wore me out.
You were hobnobbing then, weren't you?
Oh yeah, we even had Governor John Y. Brown, the Kentucky governor, original franchise guy for the Colonel. I think he still makes money every time we buy a drumstick.
I'm sure he does. I got a question for you though. You got graduation events in your family?
My family starts coming in tonight. We have a big grad party on Saturday. That remote broadcast setup that we had out at the symposium is going to be in my cul-de-sac under a tent playing, Big and Rich and all the other songs.
There you go.
So shout out to Katie. Congratulations for graduating high school. And thank you, darling, for staying in state. She's going to University of Georgia in the fall semester.
Going to be a bulldog, eh?
Yeah.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, we've got a wonderful guest in here today. I'm just excited to have him in here. It's Peter Bowerman. And he knows what writing is all about. And I think our show today is going to remind our listeners that what we do in this show is to provide encouragement to others to write, to claim their own authority to write about what they know and what they are truly good at and share that knowledge with the world. I became aware of Peter's books before I even became aware of Peter. And now it's really great to have him sitting across the table from us. Stone, I think Peter could be the poster boy for Right Here, Right Now.
Why is that?
Well, he has 16 years in sales, and then he jumped from sales into freelancing as a writer. He wrote The Well-Fed Writer, followed that with Back for Seconds, and writing became a full-time occupation. You claimed your authority and haven't looked back, have you?
Not yet.
Not
so
yet.
So far, so good.
And then you wrote The Well-Fed Self-Publisher.
Right.
You've got over 300 articles and columns. You've sold over 60,000 copies of your book.
Wow.
It's been a book of the month.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to learn. If no one else learned today, I'm going to learn. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you very much, Tim. Good to be here.
I'm so glad to have you here. So tell me, what's the quintessential secret to your overnight success?
Was that 20-year overnight success?
Yeah, that one. That one.
Well, I think one key that I would tell any writer and any business person for that matter is to always put excellence first, always put quality first. If you focus on creating the most superior product possible, the rest will fall into place. Word of mouth, repeat business, more opportunities, that kind of thing. And I really strive to practice that both in my copywriting career, because I've been a freelance commercial writer writing for businesses for almost 19 years now. And that was, the subject of The Well-Fed Writer. Delivering more than people expect. Trying to make whatever project you're working on the most interesting, the most compelling you can. And then that transfers over to books. So,
what gave you the courage, though? You were in sales.
Right.
You obviously were doing well, or I hope you were doing well enough.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the line, you said, I'm going to write. When you wrote, did you even at that time think about making it a full-time career?
Well, actually, I had wanted to write for a living for a long time. And I was one of those who, growing up, I always sort of gravitated to the writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always a good writer from a very young age. But I was never willing to starve at it. I never cut my teeth on 5 cents a word or anything like that. And so I kind of, because of that, and because the perception existed that writing was a surefire way to starve, I kind of put it off, you know, as a dream. And then I came across, in the early 90s, I came across a book by Bob Bly, who's a, kind of a copywriting guru, called Secrets of a Freelance Writer. And it was about the commercial writing field, writing for companies freelance. And it was a it was an epiphany. Who knew that companies hired out their writing tasks, many of their writing tasks, not all companies, and actually not even most companies, but enough that there's plenty of work out there.
And many more today with the economic downturn.
Exactly right. And that they pay much higher rates than you would find in the magazine realm, newspaper realm, you know, literary journal realm, that kind of thing. I mean, the Atlanta, Georgia market, low end, you're talking about 50, 60, 70 an hour on up to 125, 150 an hour or more. And so I said, aha, this is how I'm going to do it. And I kind of talked myself in and out of the idea about 100 times. And, you know, you run the scenarios in your mind. You're going to go bankrupt and, you know, lose everything. And finally, I took the plunge in early 94. And in about less than 4 months, I had more work than I could handle.
Oh, my. So, oh my.
And you know, your results may vary. Okay?
No guarantees,
That's right?
Right.
Past performance is no indicator of future results. And I really, you know, I really say that I really want to make it clear, and I try to make it clear in my books, this is not, you know, commercial freelancing is not a slam dunk of a business. You know, it's not an easy business. If you haven't had any writing experience and you're trying to get started from a dead stop, it's going to take you a while. But if you do have good writing experience and you have a lot of credits and you just want to channel that experience, say, from journalism or magazine writing into this, or you work on a corporate level as a marketing person and you've been downsized or something, or you're thinking about going on your own, those kinds of people can be, you know, make the transition easiest.
Well, what intrigues me is out of that is your first book is The Well-Fed Writer.
Mm-hmm.
And the subtitle is Financial Self-Sufficiency as a Freelance Writer. What's significant to me about that is you just said that you wrote or read a book by Bob Bly, The Secrets of Freelance Writing.
Or The Secrets of a Freelance
Writer.
Yeah.
Your book, The Well-Fed Writer, is sort of similar in title or in concept. And I lift that up, and you may want to say, no, totally different. But what I try to emphasize with my clients and with the people on this show and who are listening, that there's really nothing new out there to write about. Mm. It's our perspective. It's how we look at what we do.
Exactly. And when I, you know, and this starts getting into the whole discussion of self-publishing as well. When I originally decided to come out with this book, you know, I looked around to see, you know, what else was out there on the subject. And of course, I knew about Bob's book, and his book was literally the only book on the market on the subject of commercial freelancing. I mean, there's a zillion books on freelance writing in general, but this was the only one. And I set out to make mine different. Now, they complement each other very well. His is much, Bob is, and I know Bob personally. I just had lunch with him a couple weeks ago up in New York at a show we both were speaking at. And his book is much more straightforward, but very meaty, and he's very experienced. Mine is more fun, you know, just starting with The Well-Fed Writer, you know, that whole idea. And it's kind of irreverent, and I have a good time with it. And and I thought, hey, there's, like you said, there's enough room for another book, you know, on his, in a field where there's only one.
Always
if
room.
If there was one, if there was 20 books, I might have gone,
maybe not.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So how do you know if you're good enough to make money at writing, or if you already know you're not, how do you get good enough? Do you have like a lot of formal training, or you just threw your hat over the fence, or what?
good questions. You know, I feel like I have some kind of native writing ability. And if someone does have native writing ability, like, you know, all their life, they're the ones that everyone goes to and says, you know, you're a good writer. Can you look this over? Or, you know, we need something written. Can you write this? You know, that's a good sort of green flag, you know, that maybe this is a good direction. You know, one of the things I tell people when I do when I do a seminar, I have one part of the seminar. It's kind of a fun thing. I'll take a whole pile of samples, commercial writing samples, and I'll toss them out on a table. And people get to kind of paw through them and, you know, ask a bunch of questions. And it's great because it sort of gives them a sense of, aha, okay, this is what commercial writing is. This is the types of projects I'd be writing. And then I'll tell stories about them and how this unfolded and how that unfolded. And one of the things I always tell people is, notice the quality of the writing, okay? Could you do that? Okay. And so in answer to your question, Stone, you know, you look around at the kinds of stuff that you see as consumers, which is actually just one part of what we see as writers. You know, the brochures in the car dealership, the little rack brochures in the bank, the frequent flyer newsletter, the little insert newsletter that comes with your gas bill or whatever. Look at that kind of stuff. You know, the direct mail that comes to you in the mail. And I'm guessing if you're a decent writer, you'll look at that stuff and go, I could write that, you yeah. know. You know, it's not terribly difficult, you know. So, and so that's the thing. You don't have to be an incredible writer to do well in this business, but you do have to be a good writer. And I think sometimes people get the idea that you can just sort of, you know, be a half-assed writer, make a couple of calls, and $5,000 jobs are going to be falling into your pocket.
It's not like the radio business, where you're a half-assed host, and just show up at 10 o'clock, right?
Yeah, don't I wish. Don't I wish. I got a taste of both of those going. Well, let's shift. You mentioned it earlier, and the well-fed self-publisher. Talk to me yes. about that.
Well, when I decided to... originally started collecting information about how I did what I did as a commercial freelancer with an eye towards doing seminars.
Mm-hmm.
And then I collected all this information. And one day I looked at my computer and I had about 80 or 90 pages worth of stuff on my computer. And I was like, wow, I got enough to write a book here. And I only sort of half-heartedly went about the process of looking for a publisher. I think I contacted the dummies people, and they didn't even reply back to me, so they lost.
Those
you know.
Dummies.
Yeah, really. And I finally, and I just decided I'm going to do this myself, which was kind of a ridiculous thing because I had absolutely no experience in self-publishing. But there was some, you know, good books on the subject, you know, and some good pioneers who had sort of blazed the way before. And so, yeah, I released the first book in the fall of 2000, and actually in 90 days I was in the black, you know. And when I talk about self-publishing, obviously we didn't have Kindle. This was 2000. We didn't have Kindle, and POD was probably in its infancy. You know, this is. You hire the resource. You do everything a publisher would do. You hire the resources to produce the book, design the cover, design the inside, edit it, index it, print it, and you know you do all the marketing yourself.
That sounds quite intimidating.
It can be, but it's like I tell people, it's like you know how do you eat an elephant? You know,
one bite at a time,
because I tell people all the time, don't think about the whole process. Don't sit where you're sitting and look at, you know, that perspective of how long. Mm-hmm. Because if you do, you probably won't do it because it will seem so
it
daunting.
It can be.
So.
Well, not so long ago, and it might have been as back when you first came out, you know, in the 2000s, that self-publishing was for people who weren't real writers or couldn't get really published. You want to talk about that as you're smiling ear to ear?
Yeah, yeah. No, that and actually that perception still exists to a large extent, although with Kindle and with the POD and all that, it's changing. But, you know, frankly, you know, people talk about, you know, the stigma of self-publishing. And I say, you know, in about 98% of the cases, that stigma is completely deserved. Okay, most people just do. Self-publishing has become synonymous, oftentimes in the past, with crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. People don't put the time into it. They don't. They cut corners when it comes to producing it. They don't. You know, the big thing is they don't get their books professionally edited.
That's critical.
Yeah, and you know, critical. Even as a professional writer for a living. Mm-hmm. I have an editor, okay? You know, people would think, well, you don't need an editor. You know, you're a writer for a living, you know? But I have an editor as well. So it's becoming, the stigma is becoming less so about it. And it's funny when someone says, you know, isn't self-publishing just if you haven't been published or you can't find a publisher? And for me, self-publishing was the first option. And I make far more money self-publishing than I would ever make with a publisher.
And that's true. And that's one of the little known things that people...
Well, and one of the other little known things that people don't realize is how little support, marketing support, they're going to get from a publisher.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when I meet with my clients and we get started with, I coach them in their writing, they want to know right away about, so who's going to publish me? And they haven't even written yet. And I always say to them, there are two things you need to be aware of. One, regardless of whether you self-publish or go with a big traditional publisher, you get the opportunity to buy your own books.
Yeah,
the question is how much you're going to pay for them. And then the second thing is if you want to do that book tour, you get to pay for that too.
Right.
It doesn't matter. So you cover all of that in the Well-Fed Self-Publisher, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it pretty much is sort of a soup to nuts kind of exploration of the process from before you start writing the book, you know, way past when you actually have physical books in your hand and the fun begins, you know. So
the fun.
Well, because yeah. I mean, the cliche in our business, and it's really true, is writing the book is the easy part.
That's so, right. That's right. I came to know that too.
Yeah. And that is a very, very difficult realization for a lot of writers to come to because they think, you know, it's my magnum opus. You know, I've put my blood, sweat, and tears in, and finally it's done. And, you know, you're about a quarter of the way up the mountain.
That's right. And they're going to get rich on the royalties. I tell people I've got 4 books out there. All the royalties I get every year, I can take my wife to O'Charley's once a year for dinner. So
it's interesting because I've seen the evolution at writers' conferences that I'm a member of. I used to be sort of the novelty, and now it's become much more of a mainstream topic. People really want to, you know, they email me, oh, this is really good. Our members really want to know about self-publishing. It's a
That's
hot topic
sweet.
Right now.
That's
like,
sweet.
Tell me about it. So.
Well, Peter, would people who want to purchase one of your books, or if they want to be in contact with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, wellfedwriter.com for the Well-Fed Writer, and it also links to Well-Fed Self-Publisher, which is by itself is wellfedsp.com, and both of them, there's a free report on both those sites, and on the Well-Fed Writer, there's a free e-zine and a blog and all kinds of other goodies. You know,
good.
So.
Well, are you willing to sit around while I turn to our other guest here, and then we can open
No, I
up
want
them.
This all to myself.
You want this all? Well, there's the door. Let's. I'm
and
glad
I
you're here.
Recognize him.
You recognize him.
Yes,
boy,
I
that
do.
Makes you feel good, doesn't it, Mike?
Absolutely.
Hey, Mike. Peter Bowerman.
Peter, how
nice
are you?
To meet you.
Our other guest is Mike Panuski, and what I like most about Mike is I can call him friend. We met years ago at a job seekers meeting where Mike spoke and I was reviewing resumes, and he talked about writing a book someday, and that got my attention, and he did. He finally wrote, "When Life Gives You Lemons, Throw 'Em Back." Now, Mike has appeared in hundreds of films, of TV shows, commercials, and industrial films. You were the Democratic Party chairman of Illinois this past year, weren't you, on The Good Wife?
I was, yes, and hopefully still will be next season.
Well, that'll be fun. And then you've got some episodes in the new season of Drop Dead Diva.
Yes. I did one a few weeks back, and I'm doing another one this week.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And then last fall, you shared my booth with me at the Decatur Book Festival, and people kept coming up looking at your picture and saying, isn't that Detective Moran?
Yeah, I was the chief of detectives on Law & Order Criminal Intent for a few years, and then that show has gone by the wayside, so yeah, it's been good. I've been very busy.
Well, I am so glad you're here, Mike.
Thank you very much for having me.
So tell me, has writing your book been somewhat of an arduous journey for you, or how would you describe that?
Well, I think arduous is a start. It's not, you know, I don't really consider myself a writer. You know, I'm a guy who I have a career. I think I have stories to tell. I have lessons that I've learned that I want to share with people. I wouldn't necessarily consider myself a writer. I speak more than I write, and what I end up doing is sort of putting the things I'm speaking down on paper, and then eventually it turns into a book. And so I have a little bit different approach based on what I think I am, which because I guess I'm stuck in the stereotype of sitting in a laptop or sitting at your desktop and punching out those keys, and that's a writer. And that's not really me, because that's just too sedentary. So I'll get up and walk it out or talk it out or write little bits at a time. And the book actually is written in that, in for those, you know, the short attention span folks of the 21st century, because it's written in short essays. All of which are, to, you know, the idea was that you could read this book and not even read all of it, but read a little bit of it and put some of this stuff into practice immediately and improve yourself and improve your situation. And my goal was that it's a useful tool, not necessarily just a literary piece, but something that actually gets people moving and puts them in motion to make things better.
What I want to lift up of what you just said is writing is not something you come by naturally, but talking is, because I was working with you when you first started this.
Mm-hmm.
I knew you had great ideas, you had great content, you had great possibility, and I couldn't get you to put it down in writing.
Yeah.
And I finally said, why don't you tape it? And then
I started doing that. Yeah.
And you talked with some of your Hollywood friends, producers and directors and
yes,
all that.
Yes. And you know, there are wonderful people who do transcription at a reasonable cost.
Mm-hmm.
So God bless them. They do great work. And thank God, because it makes my life easier. So
it sure does.
A combination of a whole bunch of things. And eventually I was able to put something together that I'm really proud of.
Well, who encouraged you? Did you have a role model for doing something like this?
Not in the beginning. In the beginning, you know, I knew I had, I guess what the way it started was, is, you know, working as an actor for as long as I had, I knew that, you know, that kind of success and what it takes to be around for now, I'm doing this, gosh, more than 25 years already. There's lessons there to be learned that apply not just to people who are actors, but, you know, in a broader perspective. And so how can I share that and help other people and you know, empower them to make things better for themselves? And so that's what sort of inspired me originally to do it. And in its original form, it was okay. Working with you and then also a fellow who's a neighbor of mine, who's also an author, John Harachuran, helped me take the idea and sort of tweak it and refine it, change the title, and put it into a format that was much more user-friendly and really – the bottom line was expressed what I wanted to say in a more effective way. And so this is kind of the second evolution of how this all started. And so you and as well as John were big helps with that.
That was an unpaid...
That's a nice little commercial.
I like that.
Oh, wait. I didn't know there was such a thing.
Now, is there a second?
We can always negotiate it later.
Okay.
I'm kidding.
Is there a second book in you, you think? You think you'll write another one?
There probably is. I don't know what it is yet. I got to wait till it either kicks me in the head or it sort of, you know, because I think you got to do what you love. You got to do something that you're passionate about. And yes, I probably could sit down and write another book, but I really feel like I want to make sure I find that thing that says, oh, I got something to say here, and I think I got a really cool way to say it. So that, because it's hard work. I mean, the arduous thing, it may be a little bit of a joke, but it's hard. And especially for a guy like me who, I don't consider myself a writer. And also, it's not the primary thing I do. So it's got to be something that I feel a real passion for, because I hate the idea of starting something and not finishing it.
Well, let me run this concept by you. I was just thinking, way back when, you probably are too young to remember this, but when Ronald Reagan ran for the presidency.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I remember that.
Oh, you do remember
that? Not
that
young.
Oh, okay. And he was known as the great communicator, but oftentimes the naysayers would say, well, he's an actor and he knows how to act.
Mm-hmm.
And how does an author such as you, who is an actor, help people believe what you're saying?
Well, it's interesting because you're right. The people they don't look at acting as a serious profession. It's sort of like a hobby. It's something that you know, maybe you were anointed because you're good looking, or you just stumbled on, and one of these days you're going to grow up and actually get a real job. But the fact is that, and this was one of the things I did start to work on another book project where I was talking to a lot of other actors. I mean, high profile actors to get their story, because there's some really interesting stories about how they discovered their thing, mm-hmm. which turned out to be acting, and the path that led them to where they are. And there's great life lessons in there, because you don't work at the highest levels of any profession by accident. And when you think of the amount of money that's on the line, the high pressure, highly intense creative environment that making movies and TV shows is all about, you can't just throw anybody in there. It is frustrating for some of us who see people who come from other areas that gain some other celebrity figure, they can just pick up a script and I'm an actor and that's
it.
There's craft, there's technique, there's discipline, there's training that's involved. You got to work really hard to be good at make-believe because it's a craft like anything else. And, I'm a big advocate of the craft and what it takes to get there. I have a tremendous amount of respect for anybody who not only can make it, but who can sustain themselves. I mean, people with long careers in this business are people to be admired and respected. And their journey is filled with ups and downs and frustrations. But if you drill it all down, these are people of substance. These are people who are on a mission because they feel like this is their voice. This is the craft that they were blessed with. And they're willing to work really, really hard to get there. You see, that's the other thing about our business is you don't see the work part. You see the end result, which looks really sweet and pretty and beautiful and exciting, and all the makeup is perfect and everybody else's hair is in place, and it's beautiful. It's great. But you don't see the hours and hours and hours that it takes to get there. And you know, it can take one day in a movie, you're maybe shooting two or three pages of the script, which turns out to maybe be 2 or 3 minutes of the movie. And there's a lot that goes into that. I think that, again, it's one of those things where people just don't understand. And so I try, and when I go out and speak and I share these kind of stories, I try to help people see the backstory, the other side to how it all ends up looking so easy is a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, what I came to appreciate, and as you know, I turned to you for some help when I was writing my own Writing Secrets book, and I was dealing with the idea of voice, the writer's voice. You talked about the actor's voice, not to put you on the spot, but to put you on the spot. You remember, I turned to you and I said, help me understand how you find your voice that I can share that with writers. And I loved that story. You were called in to audition for a part.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Keep going. It's starting to come to me.
Okay. You got there and it was to be a drug or a chemically dependent person.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And what's,
a guy strung out on PCP.
And you were surprised when you got in there and you were the only male called in.
Oh, I was the only person, period.
Only person, period.
That was a very transformative experience for me. And I was still pretty young at that point. And it was about the fourth different role I'd read for in this movie. And I had gotten the material beforehand. And it was the only time to that point and the only time since then when I ever seriously said to myself, okay, I've tried this and I've done what I can here, and I just can't do it. This is just not, I think what I'm doing is awful. I'm going to walk in there and thank them very much and say, you know what, I don't think I'm your guy. Well, when you show up and you're the only one there, that's not a good move. So what, fortunately I was there early enough that I said, okay, all right, pull back. I stepped outside. So, okay, what does this mean? All right. So I've been through this process with these guys many times, and now this is other role, and it's really outside of who I think I am. But they're calling me, and I'm the only guy who's coming. All right, so what does this mean? What do I bring to the table? Why me? Why me? I mean, a guy who's never even seen PCP, let alone done it. Why me? And so what came to me was is that, okay, then what they must be looking for is somebody who you would not expect to have this kind of problem or to have this kind of outburst, who if you walk past him on the street, you just think he's some ordinary average guy, which I play a lot of those everyman kind of characters. But he's just got a drug problem, and this time it just went too far, and he's just all strung out. And so thinking of it from that perspective, I thought, okay, all right, well, I can do that. And, and went in, and I got the job. And that's exactly what they were looking for.
And that's what you're about as an actor, and what I encourage people to be as writers. Don't try to be what you think you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Be the best you in whatever it is you're writing or acting.
Yeah, that's the other lesson I learned there is that, we all have our own truth. And even as an actor, I mean, you know what your lane is, what your target zone is, the things you do well, the things that are most innately come out of you that you feel like is your sweet spot. And in those moments, the idea is not necessarily, what do they want me to become, but what can I bring to this? What do I? What are my talents? What are my specialties? What do I bring to this that can bring this to life in a way that's true? Because ultimately, that's the idea.
That's
we're trying
we're
to create truth out of an imagined reality. And the quickest way to the truth is to use yourself. So in that case, and in many, many others, you know, what's the truth that I can bring to this to bring this to life in a way that, that's real and comfortable and repeatable for me mm-hmm. and serves their story?
Well, Mike, if people want to get a copy of your book or to be in touch with you, because you also have an organization called Act to Win, mm-hmm. how can they be in touch with you?
You can get the book at throwemback.com. You can order that online there, and you can also order the audio book as well as another a couple other bonuses that go with it. If you just like the paperback version, you can get it at Amazon.com or at BarnesandNoble.com, and it's also available in Kindle format at Amazon.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Great. Well, what I'd like to do now is open up the mic, so to speak, and Peter, if you got questions for Mike, Mike for Peter, Stone, you can weigh in however you want, not that you need encouragement.
Well, just to comment, really, really interesting stuff, Mike. I see a lot of parallels between what you do and what I do. I mean, I was kind of nodding when you were talking about people don't appreciate all the work that goes into something. They just mm-hmm. see the final result, and mm-hmm. it's even more stark in your case, I guess, because you know you take how long does it take you to shoot a film? You know, 2-3 months. You mm-hmm. know, maybe
sometimes
down to
yeah.
2 hours.
Sure,
you know. So
yeah,
and the same thing with books. I mean, people have no idea how long that takes. And writers are also kind of like actors in the sense that I run into this all the time. Everybody thinks they can write.
Sure.
So, and it's a matter of, you know, convincing a client or whatever that, you know, oh, we'll just do it ourselves, that, you know, look at the difference that a writer can actually make. And when they can see that, then it's like, you know, they have the epiphany and the light bulb goes on and all that.
Yeah.
But there are some, similar things. And I love what you said about when Tim asked you about whether you have another book in you. And it's like, well, you know, if it happens. And... you know, that's how I have pretty much run my career, and I tell people, I don't set goals, okay? I'm not a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan kind of guy. Everything that I've done has just unfolded completely organically when it was time, you know, when the time was right, you know? And I think I read a book some years back. They'd sent me a copy. They wanted me to do a blurb for it, and it was a very intriguing title. It was Goal-Free Living. which will definitely get your attention. Now the point of the book was not that you're supposed to drift aimlessly through life, you know, with
right.
you know, completely unmoored and rudderless, you know.
Right.
But it was really more about, I mean, one of the chapter headings kind of summed it up. It said, use a compass, not a map. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Know the general direction in which you're heading. Okay, but be open to adventures and, you know, and side trips along the way. And when you lock yourself in, 5-year plan, I'm going to be here. You know,
mm-hmm.
you may not see things that, you know, are coming up on your path because your nose is in the map. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the same thing here. It's just kind of like, and I'm sure a lot of your career has unfolded that way. You just kind of left, you know, what comes up. And if you put yourself in the right situations, the right opportunities come along. And you know,
yeah, and ultimately I think it's which can be the other part about people who are so, you know, married to their process is that they forget about being present in this moment right here.
Exactly.
We were just on vacation last week and I started reading The Power of Now.
Ah.
Yeah. Because, you know, obviously as an actor – I mean, that's one of the foundational tenets in making this fantasy come to life is being fully present in the moment.
Right.
And that's what the good ones do. I mean, that's why when an actor walks out, when you say they have presence, well, that's because that actor is fully right there. They're just
mm-hmm.
and they listen and they're aware of their surroundings. They have command of who they are and what they're about in the moment, and they're there. And I think that in today's day and age, especially where we're so filled with distractions all the time with the cell phones and the PDAs and the iPads and and always looking to tomorrow or down the road or stuff that happened 20 years ago that still I'm carrying around my neck, people forget about the value of just being present.
Yeah.
And I think that goal-free living is sort of the same thing.
It is.
Is that, you know, relish today because
right.
that's all you got, really.
Right.
And what I tell, because I taught acting for a long time, that's all you can really influence at this point, is right now. You know, what are you going to do right now?
Everything else is an illusion. So
yeah, and I heard you talking about the idea, you know, how to eat an elephant. Well, you know, it's all one step at a time. And the only way you're going to be great tomorrow is if you're great today.
Right. And people who live by, you know, setting goals all the time, I mean, and it's true. We all know people like this. Before you even reach a goal, according to some of these, you know, goal gurus, you're supposed to set a new goal.
Yeah.
So that when you reach the first goal, you can't even enjoy that,
right?
Because you're already behind, you
right?
Know, because the next one is coming, and it's
and the guy next door, he set a goal.
Yeah.
So you're always on. Feel like you have to compete
that's
with
right.
everybody.
That's right. No, and I love what you said about you know being present. And I wrote a column some years back about, you know, this is when cell phones were not too long ago, but it's the same thing now, even you know more in spades. And it was the whole idea of that. You know, people are here, but they're really there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you see someone, you know, staring at their phone, you know, physically they're present. You know, if a truck came along, it would hit them and make a mess. Okay, but they're really somewhere else, and it must be that over there is cooler than over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to ask. These are moments you will never get back again.
Mm-hmm.
You know what. But this just sounds like a bunch of, you know, 45, 50-year-old guys sitting around talking about how the, you know, how great they used to be and how messed up people are.
And I think we're losing the value of human connection.
Oh,
because
yeah.
So many people are more connected to their contraptions or to their emails than they are being able to connect with each other as one-on-one as human beings. You know, people on Facebook have thousands of friends.
Quote,
friends.
Unquote.
Yeah. Okay? And they feel that gives them some level of self-esteem. But try carrying on a conversation with them or try, you know, what's your interpersonal relationships like?
My theory about things like Facebook, and this is probably a cruel thing to say, but for a lot of people, not everybody, but for a lot of people, things like Facebook, things like texting, whatever, it gives people who have no life the illusion that they actually do have one. You know, and
it's a basic human need to feel significant, to
right.
be loved, and it
right.
does give them that, but in a way that really ultimately is false.
Right.
Because when that fades away, or when something else comes along, they're not going to say, well, maybe I'm not significant anymore.
Yeah. Right.
And that's too bad because they missed the boat.
I just read a fascinating book
You're having a moment.
I'm having a moment.
You know the book?
A Paradise Built in Hell.
Oh.
And the subtitle was The Extraordinary Communities That Arise in Disaster. And I think the author was someone named Rebecca Solnit, Solnit. But it was so interesting. She ostensibly looks at disasters from like 1906 earthquake in San Francisco and the 85 earthquake in Mexico City and 9/11 and Katrina and you know a few others, and sees these incredible communities and this sense of connectedness and collaboration and solidarity that came out of a disaster. And so while the story is ostensibly about those things, it's so much bigger, and it's exactly what you're talking about. It's that, you know, people are starved and they crave a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. these people who go through this horrible and, you know, traumatic experience, you know, so many of often will look back and say, it was the greatest time of my life. It was
right.
the most exciting time. and we don't have much of that anymore.
Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, the clock is on us.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that happens when we get going, you know. Well, to our listeners, I welcome your comments and suggestions about the content, the discussions, the guests that you'd like to have on, or maybe you'd even like to be a guest on Right Here, Right Now. And if so, please contact me at writerightnow@gmail.com. As always, thank you, Stone, for co-hosting and keeping me on track, and thank you to my two guests, Mike Panuski and Peter Bowerman. I thank the listeners for joining us today for this edition of Right Here, Right Now. We broadcast live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com. The MP3 version is available later today. I am your host, Tim Morrison of Right Here, Right Now. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business, right here, right now.